This is Jordan Coulston. How old are you, Jordan? 25. And you became a Christian. I presume you might say some of this. When did you become a Christian again? 21. And so we know each other from Gateways, our previous church, where Jordan started coming along. She did Pathways. All sorts of stuff happened. And yeah, it's just amazing the way God has transformed Jordan and led her in her life. And then now she's doing some really cool things for the Lord. So I look forward to it. I'm just going to pray for you. Father, I thank you for Jordan. I thank you for your amazing work of salvation in her life, the way you've led her and what you've taught her. I just pray, God, that you give her words tonight to just share a testimony, Lord, and share of what she's doing and what's going on, and even just to encourage us a little bit, Lord, and the work that can be done, and the work that there is to do for your kingdom. So we just pray for your help this evening, Lord, and give us ears just to hear what you might be saying to us, Lord, through this testimony. God, give us open hearts just to be open to saying, maybe I should do some of this, or maybe I should do this other thing that you've been convicting me to do, Lord, and not just to consider myself, not just to live for myself, but to live for others. So we pray this in Jesus' name.
Oh, like back here, is it?
I think so.
Maybe?
Can you just turn up?
Hello? Yeah? Is that cool? Sweet. Okay. Hi, I'm Jordan, as Jamie said, a little bit of my testimony there. So yeah, I guess I became a Christian. Well, I definitely became a Christian, sorry. I was 20 or 21. I didn't grow up as a Christian. And from that point, a few months later, the church I was at sent me straight to Pathways Bible College, which, I mean, in my opinion, that's pretty epic that they sent me straight to Bible College. I was, yeah, really immature, and I think I made a fool of myself so many times throughout that year, but man, such a good foundation for my faith. So once again, as Jamie said, this is what I'm doing at the moment, working in Thailand, attempting to fight sex trafficking. So it's not really as Liam Neeson-y as it sounds, like it's not like Taken. Personally, for me, anyway, some people are going in there doing that kind of stuff, like doing the raids and like going into brothels and undercover work and that kind of thing. But for me personally, it's more of a, I'm sort of more on the aftercare side of it. So when the girls actually come out of the bars and brothels, we look after them as well. We rehabilitate them and then help them reintegrate into society as well. So that's kind of more my role in that kind of thing. So that's what I've been doing. Could I have the next slide, please? So this is Thailand, in case any of you didn't know where it is. It's an Asian country, and in Thai up there it says Brat Ted Thai, which means Thailand, the country of Thailand. That's kind of where it is. All right, and a little bit about Thailand. So the Thai language is Pasa Thai, which is what it says up there in Thai as well. It's a country of roughly 70 million people, so there's quite a few people there. A lot of different sort of ethnic groups as well, so especially in the area where I live, there's a lot of hill tribe people, so you get people speaking all sorts of different languages. Like, I'm learning Thai, but essentially it's kind of useless in a lot of circumstances because I can't speak to quite a few of the people I live nearby. So the currency is the Thai baht. So it's approximately, I think, 24 Thai baht to the New Zealand dollar, so it's quite a big difference there. And the country is nearly 95% Buddhist, which is the Theravada branch. So if you just go to the next slide, just briefly, you can see there a couple of Thai monks. So when I go out running every morning, that's what I see, around sort of 6 a.m. in the morning, it's Thai monks just going about. People want blessings from them, so they pray to them, they get down on their knees and they make offerings, all that kind of thing, from these monks who are held in very high esteem in the communities there. So it's kind of, it's a strange thing going running and there's a bunch of monks walking around. Often they'll have like three or four smaller monks, like little boys following them behind them with like their bare feet, and they've got their, I'm not sure what the bowls are and that kind of thing. It's really unusual. And I do remember one time I was took a motorbike ride into the mountains, and I just saw a monk up there wandering around with a laptop, and I was like, you guys even allowed those? Like, I don't know how this works, but like, we think they live in temples in the mountains, but apparently they have technology. So yeah, so on the, is it your left or right? Oh, sorry, go back again, Nathan. Yeah, that is Buddha. That is the Theravada version of Buddha. So you might have seen some Buddhas are really like fat and jolly, but there are very different branches of Buddhism throughout Asia, and this is the one that they have in Thailand. Buddhism actually originated in Thailand, so it's very, very ancient, like before Christianity. The year in Thailand at the moment is 2561. So that's what they measure. They don't do it when Christ was born. It's very different over here. Back one slide would be great. Monks get special treatment in airports, all sorts of things like that. So nominal Buddhism for Buddhist people is kind of like, I guess, Christianity in a lot of Western countries or in America, say. So it means that the cultures and the practices of Buddhism are very ingrained in the culture there, in the people, in their everyday lives. So you see like spirit houses outside of every home there, which is to catch the evil spirits that are supposed to, they want to keep out of their homes, so they make offerings at these spirit houses every day. So that's kind of how that works. And Thailand is a kingdom, so we have a reigning king at the moment. I can't pronounce his name, most Thai people can't either. But he is the 10th one in this current dynasty, I don't know how to say that. So his father passed away a year and a half ago now, and he reigned for 70-something years, I think it was. And so now this guy's taken over, and he's the king. It's all very like golden and royal, and never seen anything like it. So you can see in the map of Thailand, right up the very top there. I don't know if you can see it, kind of in the like very, very top of Thailand. It's like a bit that goes like this, is Chiang Rai. So that's where I live, right on the border of Laos on the right there and Myanmar on the left. I heard there's a church team going to Laos, is that correct? So kind of close by, huh? It's pretty cool. But yeah, I'll be right up the top. I hear you guys are going more sort of southern Laos or something like that. So come visit if you want to. visitors are always great, seriously. Life in Chiang Rai. So it's not a very big city. It's got about 70,000 people and a million in the wider province. So out of the 70 million in the whole country, it's not huge. But as you could see, it's like right at the very top. So it's not a major city. It's kind of a go-between a lot of the bordering countries, which is why there are a lot of missionary and NGO sort of people working in that area. It's very accessible for Laos and just any neighboring Asian countries. Like I said earlier, a lot of ethnic groups. And it's situated near the Golden Triangle, which used to be a huge drug trafficking sort of area. People would bring opium and grow opium in that area and bring it through. And I can't read that last bit. Oh yeah, tons of agriculture. So I get like mosquito bites daily. I think at one point I had like 60 on both my legs, and I was certain I was going to catch like malaria, dengue fever or something. But I'm okay, I'm standing in front of you, so that's great. Next one. Just a little bit of life in Chiang Rai, so just some scenic photos. There's a temple there, my house in the bottom left corner. Khao soi is a dish that we eat like regularly. It costs about $1, $1.50 for a bowl. So it's like, it's so good, so delicious, but so spicy, like insane. They just go for it. And then, that was a picture I took playing Uno with a couple of Thai kids who are in a trauma rehabilitation sort of a place. So that was how I've been learning the language, is just immersing myself in it. So I learned numbers and colours by playing Uno and games like that. So yeah, I'm at like a child's basic level of speaking Thai, and that's an achievement for me, I think. what was the next one? Driving in Thailand is terrifying. Every day we go out on our bikes, and it's like they don't have the same concepts of road rules like we do. There's no speed limit. There's just like, it's just totally other. And so you just pull out onto the road and kind of just hope that you're not going to die today. I think I've had three 3 crashes in the past year. So I've got some nicely scarred up knees and everything. But that's kind of the attitude up there, mai bin lai, which means kind of don't worry about it, everything's okay. And because luck is hugely ingrained in their culture and their beliefs, they just, it's like, I've got good luck if I didn't die, and that's wonderful. We're moving on and going to just live out the day, as opposed to our view of death and, you know, pain and all that is, yeah, very different, very Christian. And I think we take our Christian foundations of our society for granted sometimes when you compare it to a Buddhist society or something very different. So sex trafficking. But yeah, I thought I'd tell you guys a little bit about it because I don't just want to get up here and assume that everyone knows what sex trafficking and slavery is. Sex trafficking is a form of modern slavery. It's slavery, essentially. So the traffickers use things like violence, threats, and other sort of forms of coercion to cause the people to do what they want them to do, to perform commercial sex acts against their will. It's not just sex trafficking as well, though. You have people get trafficked for work, drug trafficking, like there's all sorts of different avenues in this. But I think, sex trafficking is something really, well, personally for me, it's just really close to my heart just to know that there are women and children out there, and boys as well, young boys, being forced to do these things against their will. So there's a lot of ways that people become victims. So, for example, in Thailand, I think there was a slide before this one, just explaining a little bit down the bottom about the family sort of structure. So family success is paramount as opposed to individual success. It's just not something that they consider. It's all about the family over there. And so a lot of girls will get sent from the hill tribes into the city to look for work and end up being trafficked. They get tricked into it. They get promised something that's not true, tricked into debt that isn't actually there, saying they have to pay the debt back. And so then they end up working in a brothel, in a bar, their pimp or their mama-san, they call it as well, is earning money off them. And sure, there's a few things that they like about the lifestyle sometimes, like the protection, that kind of thing, but they're having to sleep with 10 customers a night or, you know, all sorts of horrible circumstances that they live in. So they get stuck in there, and they can't tell their families all the time, though they are sending the money back to their parents because it's expected that they would support their parents. That's just how the culture works. Like, could you imagine your mum or dad sending you in the city, like, go get work, and then you end up in that situation? It's just totally unthinkable that parents in a Western society would do that to their children. But I'm not saying that the family culture over there is a bad thing. In a lot of ways, they do a lot of stuff way better than we do. But, it does affect how these girls end up there. And it takes place in all sorts of places. Like, you've got your bars and brothels, those sorts of ones. But there's also domestic sort of places that it happens as well. Sexual abuse is, it's just everywhere. A big part of it as well is the slippery slope. So initially they will end up in a bar. They're just serving customers. They just have to sit with the customers and that kind of thing. But from that point, it's slippery slope. It goes down and they're being asked to, you know, do dances for the customers, and then eventually they're sleeping with them. So it's just, constant downward spiral once they're sort of in that environment. Getting them out before that stuff happens is also very important. That's about that. The young, vulnerable, uneducated, and poor people are taken advantage of. So they don't have a good education coming from the hill tribe area. Often they haven't gone to school. They're uneducated. They can't get a good job, and so they end up in this sort of a situation. And like it says up there, around 14 to 16 years old, that's usually the age of the girls that end up doing this kind of work, which is, it's really, it's horrible to think about. To think about being a 14-year-old girl working in that environment. And, they get stuck there. There are situations where sometimes in a village setting, a girl will be raped, and then it's sort of considered that she's not worth much. She'll either have to marry her rapist or something, you know, even more horrible. She's just not a virgin anymore. She's not marriageable. So the people, the girls that come into the care of the organisation I work for, that's another scenario, another way that they end up there because they're just very endangered, I guess. Next one. So a little while ago, we were a group of us went down to Bangkok in a place called Pattaya. I don't know if many of you have heard of it, but this is a photo from Walking Street down in Pattaya, which is, I think it's a few kilometres long, just of just straight up sex establishments, like just all neon lights and advertising. There's young girls that work in there. Some of them definitely, you know, of age. They're there by choice and that kind of thing. But we went there just to do some media stuff, and just, I mean, the environment of it was just crazy. It was just like a huge, full-on party, like the whole night long. And, so we were there, and I was just with another friend. She was doing filming. I was supposed to be acting, that kind of thing, pretending to be having a good time so she could get covert shots of what was going on in the bars and around us and that kind of thing. But, a few guys came up to us and, you know, tried whatever they were trying to do. And we got talking to them and asked them, why are you here doing this? And they told us that they save up every year for the whole year just so that they can come from Australia and spend a week or two in Pattaya sleeping with women and just living this party lifestyle. And they go back home and do it all over again every year. And that's their reality. That's what they live for. I mean, it can make you angry, but it helped me to see that a lot of these men are just as enslaved as the women who are stuck in this as well, in a totally different way. They're enslaved to their own desires, their selfishness. They don't know a better God, and so this is what they do, this is what they worship and how they live their lives. So the next one, just a few realities, I guess. So there's definitely the tourist industry, like I was just saying, those guys we met. So people come over from places like Australia, New Zealand, America, the UK, and they go to places like Thailand, also the Philippines, India, and they're just looking to sleep with women, young children, take advantage of people, pay the money, they get the services kind of thing. But locals also take part. That's a huge part of it too. So it's not just the tourists. The local sort of bars are kind of worse in some ways because it's more undercover, sort of like people don't know what's happening, so the girls get paid less, treated worse. So that goes on as well. A lot of them are underage, but a lot of them, like I said, enjoy the lifestyle. They're there by choice, so that's hard to tell sometimes when you're trying to rescue someone from something like that. I guess the whole sex industry just sees people as commodities. So there's pornography out there, and a lot of people watch pornography or are addicted to pornography, but don't realise how it fuels the sex trade. So not all of the things that you see in pornography are legal or consensual either. A lot of it comes from this kind of a background. And also a lot of small children are exploited, or their virginities are sold, not obviously up front. It's gone a lot more underground, especially recently, a lot more internet, sort of dark web, I think they call it, involvement there. So a lot of underground stuff happening. So children's virginities are sold, girls and boys, and services paid for. They make child pornography as well. It's a bit of a harsh reality, really. Next slide. So now I guess, after showing you all of that horrible stuff, so that's kind of what, I didn't know all of that stuff when I left, but now just realizing that's actually what I would like part of my life to reflect, is fighting that evil. So fighting sex trafficking, that photo out there is actually a beautiful girl, Kai Moog, who was rescued from a bar in northern Thailand. And she's now living in one of her homes. She's just, she's delightful. She was teaching me how to spell all the Thai numbers, how to write them down. She's so intelligent and speaks like fluent English. It's just, it's amazing to see such joy after brokenness. So I guess, how do we fight it? There's a lot of anti-sex trafficking organisations that you can get involved with or, look into, but I guess Something encouraging for me about it is I work with Destiny Rescue, but we also work hand in hand with a lot of the other organisations. So if there's something we can't do, like we don't look after boys because we have so many girls in our care, it just doesn't work very well. And so any boys that are rescued get sent to other organisations who can better care for them. So that's just a positive that comes with, like, we're all joined together in this, trying to fight the evil that's happening. It's not competitiveness. It's, yeah, that's encouraging. Next slide. So yeah, this is why Destiny Rescue exists, to rescue, restore, protect, empower, and be a voice for the voiceless. So those who can't speak for themselves, those who are trapped, who stuck in slavery, need freedom, I guess. So how we work would be the next slide. Prevention, so that's a big part of it, stopping them from ending up in the sex trade to start with. This is what I'm going to be working on a lot this coming year, working in the hill tribes and surrounding areas, teaching people about sex trafficking and things so that their children don't get sent into the city and we just stop it at its source. That's really, really important. That photo is taken at our prevention home. A few of those boys there now are with another organisation doing really well. So next slide. Rescue, obviously, I explained a bit of that. It's not all, Liam Neeson-y. It's more sort of a lot of our guys who do the rescue side of things, it is undercover work, so they'll go in, meet with the girls, form relationships with them, make them an offer, they come and live with Destiny Rescue. But sometimes it is raids, so they're sort of gathering information and just dragging the girls out of there, basically arresting the pimps, everything, it's all go, and there's a lot of potential things that could go wrong, but often a lot of people will be rescued all at one time. Restoration is the next one, so the journey that the girls go on once they are out of it. So those are some of the girls in the home in Chiang Rai. I've had the pleasure of working with a few of them over this last year. They're really beautiful, but yeah, like any teenage girls, they can be sullen and not want to do anything and just not grateful for what they've been given, even though I mean, it's just must be teenagers, and a lot of the culture is a hard thing to break through as well, because we're Western people, white people, we don't fully understand it, and so it's so important that we're working with local people too, who know the culture, Christians definitely, who love Jesus, but they are in there working with these girls and really making breakthroughs. Reintegration, so we give them vocational training and a lot of support, and they can go through, they graduate from the program and go out into the world and are able to look after themselves and work better with their families. So the next slide. I guess I just wanted to point out that it's not just a social cause, like a lot of people come over and it's just about, we just want to save people, we want to rescue people, give them a better life, but what does that matter if they don't know Jesus, if they're not going to go into eternity and know their Saviour? It's just like it's all kind of for nothing, because they end up just, I don't know, when people don't have, it's really close to my heart that people don't just end up like the people that they've been rescued from in a lot of ways. Like, what are we worried about if we're not following Jesus? We're worried about ourselves, we're worried about what do we look like, our social status, power, all of that kind of thing. So there's no point to it at all if they don't go off into eternity knowing their Lord and Saviour. So that's important, though really hard to convey when you don't speak much Thai, sharing the gospel, man. This is something also close to God's heart. I just wanted to point out that Jesus loved children, and he loved children when he was here more than anyone else on earth. Like, children were not regarded as high, sort of important beings in society, and he said, let them come to me, for to such belongs the kingdom of God. He just loves children. He has such a heart for the young and the innocent and the broken and those people. And I guess it's hard to see in that past photo, just little, like, girls just dressed up like that, like just being over-sexualized, and they're intended for use is nothing more than just a commodity, like being sold. And that's all that they know, that's the worth that they think they hold, is just that they are for someone's use, and that's it. And I think if that breaks my heart, if it breaks your heart, I mean, imagine how God feels about seeing that his little ones treated like this. But the fact is that even in all of that, he is present. So on the next slide, I thought it was super clever. I took a picture of Chiang Rai with the sun coming up, and I was like, yeah, that's real, like, meaningful and significant. So amidst such darkness, God is sovereign still. But seriously, I can laugh about that. But he is. He's right there with them. He's in that. Not that he loves that it's happening, but he's so present. Even in the brothels and those dark, horrible places where that happens, he suffers with those children and he witnesses their pain and their defilement. Everything that goes on, he's right there with them, loving them. And I love that that's the God we serve, that he loves those broken and so rejected by society, I think. So I guess that's something that has always struck me about Jesus, is how lowly he was when he was here. Like, he was born in a manger, like, amongst, like, swine and dirt and everything. It was so lowly. And he washed the feet of his disciples, and they were, what, liars, thieves, traitors, really, like, representative of all of us in a big way. And when they were crying out, crucify him, they chose Barabbas over him, a murderer. He was rejected to the point where they would choose a murderer over him. And he died a criminal's death as well. But I think it just shows that he can really relate to these girls who are just so stuck in such horrible situations, so broken, so lowly, rejected by society. Obviously, being a prostitute isn't the most glamorous or accepted vocation, but he relates to them, and he loves them, and he knows them. So the fact of that is, though, he died again, and he reunited us all to God, and he does hear their cries. He listens, and he promises justice for those who have been afflicted. So even though they live such a lowly life, he promises them so much more than that. Next slide. Yeah, so there's just in Psalm 10, 7 to 18, I'll just read that one out because it affects me every time I read it. O Lord, you hear the desire of the afflicted. You will strengthen their heart. You will incline your ear to do justice to the fatherless and the oppressed, so that man who is of the earth may strike terror no more. And yeah, it's just like a promise from God that though they're so lowly, so oppressed, he loves them, he listens, and they will receive justice. So this is just a photo of two of our girls who graduated, Mew and Woon, the program recently, so they're now working in hospitality, which is really exciting. I think they're only 16 years old, the both of them. So a big part of the graduation service ceremonies we have is that we pray for them, pray them out. We also, so it's just, I guess, like, emphasizing it's not just white people coming in there and forcing our culture on them. We also want, like, the whole point of it is that we show them the truth and set them free. We empower them with that. It's not just about, like, this is how you should be living, you're doing it all wrong. We want them to have the truth. So it's that verse in John, they will know the truth and the truth will set them free. So at the graduation ceremony, that's them just having words of love and encouragement spoken over them up the front. We wash their feet, which is such a significant thing for me, just showing that we, because white people are revered in their society, they look to us like, oh, I wish I had white skin, you know, it's really crazy and ridiculous. But we just make sure that we let them know we're there to serve them and love them, and that they're washed clean of their past and can go forward now into something greater and something more wonderful. So they always have the gospel shared with them, which is definitely the most important part. There's a photo of me looking like an idiot. I was playing charades, but it's in Thai, and I was like, you might have got it right. I don't know, maybe. This is really crazy at the Christmas party. So just encouraging that anyone can get involved in this. Like, it takes people from every corner of Christianity. It's not just the teachers and the doctors and that kind of thing. It's people giving money. It's people working in media, people doing HR, business, just, I guess, using all of our talents to fight the evil that's in this world. And not just this evil, but other darkness that's there as well, and other oppression. So the next year for me, 2018, I guess I just also tacked on that. I want to share a bit about my personal journey. So this year I will be heading up a new prevention and education program in the hill tribes and the villages up in the mountains and things, just for equipping and empowering the communities to protect themselves and future generations. So, like I said, stopping the sex trafficking at the source. So there's a list of all the things that it's directed at. So there's things like sex trafficking, obviously sharing the gospel is a huge one, women's rights, conflict resolution, like I was saying in, well, actually I might have not mentioned that, but in Thailand they don't do conflict very well, in a sense that saving face is everything. Like, you do not yell at someone, you do not point, you do not, like, all sorts of things. You're, like, considered a lowly person if you do those things. It's not, yeah, it's not all about you and your rights and everything. You don't enforce those on people. It's just not how it works. So conflict resolution is actually important. Online safety, that's a big one. Like I said, the internet is really, deeply affecting the sex industry, and a lot of, girls will be exploited online, a lot of children exploited, like groomed by pedophiles and things like that. And so just teaching them how to be safe online, because internet is easier to get than water over there. It's so crazy. And all of them have phones, they're all online, they're all doing this stuff. And so teaching them about how to be safe around that is really important. But also I wanted to add that I can stand up here and seem like I'm a great missionary and everything, but the reality is that over there it's lonely. Like, I struggle with a lot of stuff. Day-to-day life is, like, it's not hard, but it's inconvenient in a lot of ways. Riding a motorbike in a monsoon is not fun, but we don't have cars, and so that's, yeah, it's a whole different story. But being over there and serving, it's not like I have everything together. I still struggle with depression and loneliness and a lot of doubt sometimes, but I guess amongst all of that, I can stand up here and testify for God's faithfulness and how good he is and the way he loves us, even when we feel like we're failing him daily. It's, yeah. And I guess it's all about that personal closeness with him, the personal holiness, and making sure that we are close to him every single day. That's like the real mission of my life, and I guess of anyone's life. I've realized is to stay close to Christ daily, and to give him our hearts and not be so worried about the works we're doing for him. Just allowing him to be strong in my very apparent weakness. I think one of the most special things that happened for me this year was my Thai friend, Oh. She's a single lady over there. We hang out quite a bit. She speaks English, so that makes it easier. But she wanted to go to the gym one day, and I was like, all right, I'll go to the gym with you. And then I just kind of lingered with her. She wanted to have a sauna, that kind of thing, so we did that. And then she was asking about Christianity, and she's a Buddhist. I was able to share the gospel with her just because, making connections with people has just been so important and so vital for me. So that was probably one of the most special moments of my whole year, despite everything else that's been going on. This year is going to be a challenge, but definitely trusting him, because I've seen his faithfulness and how he's worked before. So if there's anything you take away from this message, I hope it's that. And the final slide that says Kop Kun Ka, which means thank you in Thai. Thank you.